The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Good morning and welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday. It is just astounding how quickly the news can turn on a dime. I ended up calling Joey Chester, who's the communications manager for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, fairus.org, by the way, yesterday, because Supreme Court issued an order that the Texas law that allows local police to arrest and deport, you know, illegal aliens that would come into the state of Texas, it was okay for them to do it, and then it flipped overnight. And Joey, it's great to have you on from Fair US. It's like, you know, I was thinking, hey, wow, we could really talk about something that is happening that was actually some progress here, but I'm feeling like the proverbial old Peanuts cartoon with Charlie Brown kicking the football with Lucy, and all of a sudden Lucy takes the football away. But this wasn't the Supreme Court that did it. It was a court of appeals, right? Isn't that the latest that we're hearing this morning? Welcome.
Yeah, Bill, it's great to be with you. So what happened was the Supreme Court yesterday afternoon allowed Texas law SB4 to go into effect. They said that they wanted the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to rule on it first before they made the decision on it. So basically, they allow it to go into effect and then let the Fifth Circuit deal with it and then see how it plays out. But then last night, after the SCOTUS ruling, the Fifth Circuit came in and paused SB4's implementation. And basically, what will happen now is Texas has requested to the Fifth Circuit that the law be allowed to go into effect while the appeals court considers its legality. Now, that hearing is supposed to be sometime this morning, so it'll be interesting to see whether the Fifth Circuit then says, okay, yes, the law can go into effect while they consider its legality. But eventually, I think this ends up back in front of the Supreme Court. You know, if it ends up being ruled that it is legal by the Fifth Circuit, then I'm sure the Biden administration and others will then appeal it up to the Supreme Court. And if Texas loses, I imagine they will do the same thing. So I think eventually we end up back at the Supreme Court.
So just to be clear, now we're not attorneys. We're just trying to understand what the attorneys and the judges are doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Effectively, Joey, what happened then is that the Supreme Court, it did not actually rule on the merit of the law per se, or actually dig into the, it's just whether or not the law could go into effect right now. And then it goes back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Is that how, did I describe that correctly?
Yes. And the Fifth Circuit will rule on the legality of the law. So basically the Supreme Court said there's been this debate on whether the law can be implemented while the legality of it is decided. And basically the Supreme Court said, yes, the law can go into effect while the court still decide it. So, so we could still see that eventually this ends up with the law going into effect. Like I said, there's that other hearing today where it could end up going back into effect. It just depends whether or not Texas wins there. But again, either way, on the legality side, I think no matter who wins or loses, that appeal is going to eventually end up in front of the Supreme Court. And then we'll probably have a Supreme Court ruling on whether the law itself is constitutional.
Huh. I get the impression that the court didn't really want to do much more than what it did, right? That's kind of what the way I understand it. Pretty sticky wicket. What the Constitution, Joey, actually guarantees the states, you know, the states of the United States, you know, a Republican form of government, which means that you don't have anarchy on a border, right?
You're
supposedly there to protect us from invasion. Do you know if the arguments are hinging on what is defined as an invasion? I'm kind of wondering, you know, where is this? Or is this more like, hey, we're happy to have states enforce all sorts of other federal laws that are on the books, but, that pesky immigration law, we don't want you doing anything about that. How do you see this, you know, as, you know, a member of someone who is a great group that's fighting for immigration reform all the time? What do you think?
Sure. And I'm, just to be clear, I'm not a lawyer, so
right.
I'm just speaking to how I understand it. And from what I understand, Texas is making the argument on the invasion.
The invasion. Okay.
You know, they declared that they were being invaded. A bunch of Texas counties have said this as well. And basically saying, you know, because the federal government won't do its job to protect them from that invasion, they feel that they need to take matters into their own hands and enforce immigration law. And look, I was down in Texas last month, and local residents and officials there feel completely abandoned by the Biden administration. They are furious with Biden and Mayorkas for a complete and total lack of immigration law enforcement at the border. And they are so thankful for what Governor Abbott is doing because they're actually seeing an impact in Texas. That's what we have to remember, is what Abbott is doing is actually working. He has effectively dropped crossings in Texas, and illegal aliens are now going to places like California and Arizona to cross instead, partially because they know what they're going to encounter in Texas. But the Biden administration has been against Governor Abbott every step of the way.
The illegal aliens, by the way, are rational actors. And when I say that is that they're responding to incentives and or disincentives, because essentially what's been happening here the last few years, especially in the Biden administration, is that it's been open season. Hey, whatever you want. No one's going to really touch you. In fact, we'll even fly you or bus you to practically wherever you want to go, right? I mean, so I'm trying hard not to actually blame illegal aliens. I have a feeling if I was living in South America and I was poor, I'd probably want to come up here too. But that doesn't make the situation better for us here as these individuals are flooding in. Fair enough?
Yeah, Bill, you're really getting at to kind of what this boils down to, and that is perception is a really key thing in all of this, and deterrence is a really key thing. So when there's this perception around the world that it's really easy to get into the United States under the Biden administration, heck, if you're from a certain country, you can fly right in, you can be granted parole, and you can be issued a work permit. And yeah, if you're fleeing, if you claim to be an economic migrant, you will happily take a job in America compared to your home country, most likely. But then, like we're seeing in Texas, when they know that what they're going to encounter is razor wire and an actual wall and potentially get arrested by National Guard or DPS, then, that's not the place that they're going to choose to cross. So, like I said, if President Biden took executive action today and sent a message around the world and said, all of this is ending. These are the actions that we're taking. If you come to the border the wrong way, you will not get in. People would respond to that.
Yeah. Joey, if the southern Mexico border, the border with Mexico, was only Martha's Vineyard, the entire thing was Martha's Vineyard, this would have been taken care of a long time ago. Kind of half kidding, but not really. That's sort of a situation, but they got rid of them real quick out of Martha's Vineyard. Remember when they were being bussed in by the same governor, right?
Oh yeah. And now I saw this morning that DeSantis is talking about if some Haitian migrants end up floating into Florida, that he may send some to Martha's Vineyard. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it's kind of funny to me. All these cities declare themselves as sanctuary jurisdictions for years and years, and then the border crisis hits, and a bunch of these illegal aliens end up in these sanctuary cities, and they no longer want to be sanctuary cities.
Well, they never had to live with the consequences right. of their virtue signaling, and then all
exactly.
of a sudden, wait a minute, we didn't really mean that. We're just kind of like saying this because all of our friends at the cocktail parties want us to think this way. I want the illegal alien living in your house, not in my house. That kind of thing. But go ahead.
I was going to say, have you guys down in Southern Oregon dealt with any illegal aliens? Have you had any show up?
Yep. You know, here's the problem that we've been experiencing, Joey. From what I can tell, it's a real stealth invasion of sorts. And what we're getting, it's like we're not getting, we don't appear to have the same kind of a situation like Lutheran Services comes in and openly, you know, brings a whole bunch of migrants in. What we tend to have are those anonymous white buses that end up coming into town every now and then that nobody can say anything about or nobody can trace anything about. They'll stop at the Rogue Valley Mall or they'll stop at a shopping center someplace. And then you have a bunch of people get off the bus. That's kind of what we've seen, but that's been about the extent to it. Nothing that you can follow. It's almost like they're just trying to slide everybody under the you know, under the doormat, so to speak, is what it feels like. But obviously, we certainly have a homeless and drug addiction and cartel problem, but that certainly couldn't be connected with what we're seeing. Okay, just so you understand,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, when I was down in Texas, I saw those white buses that you're talking about. I saw where they're dispatched from. And, yeah, they're just, they have no markings on them, blacked out windows, and they just get dispatched to pick up illegal aliens. They get transported throughout the country.
Yeah, so to not call it a invasion is certainly facile, okay? All right. Well, I was hoping that we were going to be able to talk about how great this was, that the law was allowed to be enforced, but now we've been flipped around again. However, I am reading now that sources are saying that 8 o'clock this morning, West Coast time, it'll be 11 o'clock on the East Coast, is that there's going to be more oral arguments on this law, and maybe it will be allowed to be enforced again. And by the way, could you explain to me just what that law does? You know, how tough is it? How moderate is it? How do you see it over at Fair U.S.?
I think it's a really tough law. It's certainly stronger than anything the Biden administration is doing. Mm-hmm. I think the problem that Texas is going to have, the implementation of it, how they're actually going to carry out this law, because one of the provisions is that it allows them to send illegal aliens back to Mexico. And Mexico has said that they are not going to cooperate with Texas to take back illegal aliens from the state. So that part of the law will be interesting to see what exactly happens there. And then the rest is, yeah, they are. And I talked to folks along the border in these border counties. And right now what they're doing is they're arresting a lot of people for criminal trespass, and they're putting them in jail, you know, for 60, 90 days. Or they're putting them in jail for human smuggling, just depending on what the charge is. But it'll actually make the illegal entry part a crime, a state crime. So they'll be able to actually arrest and hold a lot more people. And, like, it's interesting, just to give you another snapshot, that what Abbott is doing is working. Just a couple weeks ago, an illegal alien crossed the border, and I believe it was Texas DPS or it was National Guard working under Operation Lone Star encountered this illegal alien, and it turns out it was a suspect on the terror watch list.
Okay.
And if Operation Lone Star wasn't out there patrolling, this guy could have became a gotaway and, you know, walked into the United States. Maybe Border Patrol would have encountered him eventually, but it was Operation Lone Star that encountered him. So I'll just leave it at what Abbott is doing is working.
Okay, good. The one thing that has concerned me most is that lost in all of the conversation about immigration reform is that we're so fixated on the millions that have been allowed to just essentially walk in and have their way with the welfare system, with everything in general. And what gets lost then is how many millions are coming in legally and what's the right number? I mean, what does the United States actually need as far as legal immigration? And no one even seems to want to talk about that. It's, you know, how many high-tech engineers can come in to undercut American wages? You know, and so, you know, we get all that sort of talk, or very little talk about that, I should say. And we're all fixated on just the southern and or northern borders and things. But, you know, how much do we really need, truly need? Not what Facebook says it needs. Or Zuckerberg or the high-tech world, you know?
Yeah, so FAIR's stance is reducing legal immigration levels from well over 1 million at present to what we believe is a very generous 300,000 a year over a sustained period. That allows us to manage growth, maintain a high quality of life. And I think in all of this, it should be Americans deciding what our immigration policies should be, what we need as a nation, what's going to help us grow, what we can maintain. Most importantly, we need to keep law and order, and we've also got to deal with the people who are here. You know, we need to deport people as we encounter them. We've got to dry up the incentives that are keeping illegal aliens here and driving further illegal immigration. And a conversation that, you know, some people don't want to have is, you know, what is the right legal immigration number? But we do believe that that number needs to be reduced to a more manageable level.
Yeah, because I'll hear a lot of people say, well, I'm fine with immigration. It needs to be legal immigration. I'll even hear talk show hosts say that, but they never talk mm-hmm. about the number, because what do we really need? Now, you talked about, 300,000. 300,000 is just 60 days, just 2 months worth of the illegal immigration that's been talked about and under the Biden administration, yeah. 5,000-6,000 a day, right? And that's been continuing and still going on in all the other border states, too. And the million or more legal coming in, and the HB1 and HB2 visas. It's something that truly needs to be discussed more vigorously. And I appreciate your work over at FAIR, okay? Joey, I thank you so much for checking in here, and hope to see you a little later this year, for sure, okay?
Awesome. Keep being well. Bill, look forward to next time.
Bye. Joey Chester, Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIRUS.org. I've been a big supporter of the group, and I've been working with him for a number of years. FAIRUS.org.
Two Dogs Fabricating knows trailers. They sell trailers and repair trailers. So if you'd like your trailer inspected, bring it to the dogs and they'll sniff it out. Two Dogs will check the axles, hitch, tongue, lights, bed, brakes, and more to make sure your trailer's roadworthy. Most trailers on the road are fine, but it's good to have it checked out once a year. They'll scrutinize crucial welds for corrosion and cracks too. And if you need any repairs, you'll get a quick, reasonable estimate. Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way, off Sage in Medford.
This is Bill Meyer. Appreciate you waking up mornings with me, 6 to 9 on KMED and KCMD. But I get it. Life can be busy. Sometimes you might miss a show or segment, or what did that guest say again? And that's when you can catch up and stay current with my podcast. The last 3 months of shows are available for free download and sharing on KMED.com. Podcasts are sponsored by Clouser Drilling, and they're online at ClouserDrilling.com. And thanks to Clouser, you can drill into what really happened on The Bill Meyer Show on KMED.com.
American Wrencher Garage is your premier auto care provider, serving Medford, Central Point, and the Rogue Valley, providing nothing less than the highest quality standard of professionalism on every single service and repair. Call today. Appointments are available for oil change to engine change. Get the peace of mind you deserve at American Wrencher Garage on Biddle, across from Elmer's. 499-6673. 499-6673. American Wrencher Garage. We stand behind every job we do, with service you can trust.
Nominations are open for this year's Bi-Coastal Media Best of Southern Oregon contest. Nominate and support your favorite businesses now through April 3rd at bestofsouthernoregon.com. There's nearly 200 categories to nominate all your favorite suppliers of goods and services. Whether it's activities and entertainment, business services, home and garden, shopping, and more, there's a category to nominate all of your favorites. So visit bestofsouthernoregon.com today. Nominations close Wednesday, April 3rd at 5 p.m.
I'm Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Wheels up Wednesday. This is the Bill Meyer Show, 6:31. And we're going to break for news and then be right back with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Lot going on in the transportation world, and we will catch up with that. Also, taking your calls at 770-563-3770-KMED, all right? And if you have a question about a vehicle or a comment on what we've been digging into, hey, that's great, all right? We'll have that coming up. Couple of other stories I wanted to mention here briefly here. So I talked with Captain Bill Simpson after the show yesterday, and there was no agreement to go forward in Siskiyou County with an emergency declaration, when it comes to the excrement show going on, the attack on the people and the environmental damage of the Klamath Dam removal process there. And they've tabled it for now, and I guess there's going to be talk about it going on next week. They're going to try again next week. And this is again a teachable moment on what happens when you go to these five county commission type districts, which Siskiyou County is in California. Of course, their board of supervisors, the same thing, just a different name. And they have five supervisors. The only supervisor which wanted to do the emergency declaration was Ray Haupt. Ray Haupt, who is the guy that is in the district that has most of the environmental damage. And the rest of the county commissioners or the board of supervisor members sat on their hands. That is what the Democrats want for both Josephine and Jackson County. They want five county commissioners, districts. So this way we're fighting amongst ourselves rather than having three county commissioners, both in Jackson and Josephine County, that care about the entire county, not just the district that they come from. Dead serious about this. Yet another teachable moment on why these charter changes, the three that the Jackson County for All Democrats people are pushing here for the May election, are pushing those three measures to change the charter. And in Josephine County, 17-116, that charter repeal and replace. That's why both of them, both groups that are pushing these are so dangerous. The ideas are so dangerous, what they're trying to do. So this way we could be just as, weak and ineffective as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. That's what they want. It's like a divide and conquer sort of situation. Because as it is right now, they can't get anything done there. You got five of them in districts, and you got one that's having all the problems, the economic impact of the Klamath Dam removal and all the damage. Haupt cares about it, and Supervisor Haupt and all the rest of them. I don't know. It's like, what happened? Or I'll say, I got a contribution from a tribal group, and I have to really pay more attention to them rather than what's happening to the county as a whole. I look at what's happening with the Klamath as a teachable moment, okay? Yet another reason to vote down these charter changes in Josephine and Jackson County. It's an open attack on our government, okay? Yeah, we can be as effective, or in this case, ineffective, as Siskiyou County. 634 at KBD, KCMD. We'll catch up on the rest now. News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate, and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Natalie Cerno with your NBC5 Morning News Update. A lawsuit filed last week alleges that State Representative Christine Goodwin does not live in her district. The case is scheduled to be heard in a Josephine County court next month. The lawsuit was filed by Josephine County Commissioner John West, among others, and it also alleges Goodwin falsely claims to live at the Falk Estate Vineyards in Canyonville. Goodwill is currently the representative for District 4, and she is running for State Senate in District 2. Both districts represent parts of Josephine, Jackson, and Douglas counties. The lawsuit claims Goodwin lives in Myrtle Creek, which is not in either district. The case will be heard by a Josephine County judge on April 1st. And new from overnight, Jackson County Commissioner candidate Rebecca Mueller has withdrawn from the May primary to support fellow Democrat Denise Krause's campaign. This means Denise Krause is now running unopposed for the Democratic nomination for commissioner. She's also one of the organizers behind Jackson County for All, which has three measures on the upcoming ballot. The measures aim to change the Board of Commissioners, including expanding the board from 3 to 5 and making the positions nonpartisan. Krause filed to run for the position on the day of the deadline, March 12th. For local news anytime, head on over to our website, KOBI5.com. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Natalie Cerna. Have a great day.
An intelligent solution saves you money. This is Randall at Advanced Air. It takes an expert to navigate the current HVAC rebates. Call Advanced Air to save big on equipment replacement. Advanced Air is currently offering an additional rebate on qualifying systems, up to $1,000 on Bryant mini split and crossover heat pumps. Some exclusions apply. Advanced Air and Bryant do whatever it takes to deliver intelligent heating and cooling solutions. Visit myadvancedair.com for details.
Your intelligent heating and cooling solution. Visit myadvancedair.com.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
Well, you know a door list, Tobin's Paws, we both recommend.
Now I told you where, let us tell you why, you ought to stop and see our friend.
Lamont here from Orley Stoves and Spas. Are you tired of those huge heating bills just to stay warm and comfortable in your own home? Then now is the time for a new wood, gas, or pellet stove from Orley Stoves and Spas. Orley's has Southern Oregon's largest inventory with over 400 stoves in stock now. Never be cold again. And for a limited time, receive a 30% tax credit on qualifying wood or pellet stoves and installation. Are you ready for a relaxing spring and summer enjoying your new pool, swim spa, or hot tub? Then Orleys has everything you need. We are fully stocked on Splash Around above ground pools and accessories. Orleys is Southern Oregon's largest cow spa dealer with over 55 spas and swim spas in stock now, as well as the shortest lead time of any dealer in the valley on any special order. Don't forget to ask us about our easy financing. Orleys Soaps and Spas at the corner of Delta Waters and Crater Lake Highway, Medford, 541-779-5340.
Welcome back to the Bill Myers Show, 106.3 KMET, 99.3 KCMD.
6:38, a different theme for Wheels Up Wednesday now. Just want to be soberly talking about the issues of liberty and transportation. It's sober from Tool. I love it. Anyway, Eric Peters, epautos.com, automotive journalist. Welcome back, Eric. Great to have you on, sir. How are things, huh?
Thank you, Bill. I'm glad to be here again. I need a respite from the latest. Have you been following the injunctions of Z Bastida?
Z Bastida.
She's the new Greta Thunberg.
Oh, that's right. I was reading Martin Armstrong last night. Martin Armstrong had mentioned something like that. Yeah, the new Greta. Of course, she's more diverse because she's not white. And that's very
right. And also, you know, Greta has aged out. So, you know, now she can be criticized because she's a young woman. And so they needed to bring out another child so that how dare you?
Well, you know, children cry. Hence, we must destroy society. That's the kind of the role of the ages right now. Yeah, I guess she's everywhere. She's everywhere right now. And I have yet to have seen her. So I guess I've been under a mushroom pile or something like that. I'll have to find out a little bit more about it. But I'm sure that La Bastille, what did you say her name is again?
Z, and you know, I think she's Latin, Mexican. I don't know why she has sort of an Asian-sounding first name, X-I-Y-Z Bastida.
Okay, Z Bastida, I'm sure, is looking for liberty and individual transportation options and things like that. And it is probably for the freedom of the people, I'm sure. She's only being pushed up by the World Economic Forum, so what could go wrong with that, right?
Yeah, you know, they love using these kids who have no idea that they are pawns in this this really evil, elaborate game of chess.
Well, pat her on the head and feed her a mealworm sandwich, okay? That's all we have to do. Yeah, just the mealworm. She'll get down with the program. Hey, you've been writing a lot on EP about a lot of great stuff here recently, and we're still able to speak freely here, but I'm astounded at when you actually see Supreme and hear Supreme Court justices talking about the First Amendment, how they are just going, circling around, and not just Ketanji Brown Jackson, who, of course, was criticizing. We're all, you know, down in there about, oh, the First Amendment hamstrings the government. Yeah, everything in the Bill of Rights does, okay? Everything is supposed to. And the Supreme Court seems to be wanting to find an excuse for a compelling interest. How many times did you hear that term, compelling interest, in those arguments over the federal government kind of partnering with social media to censor people? How many times did you hear that, compelling interest?
Well, sure, and who's compelling interests are we talking about here? Of course, it's always the government's, isn't it? And it's of a piece with this thing I was reading about this morning, I think in Washington State, where they're saying that now you don't have to graduate from law school, or I think you're past the bar, one of the two, in order to practice law in the state. So.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Washington also says you don't have to be a citizen to get a professional license, too. So, you know, just go ahead and just a pop over in one of Joe Biden's migrant buses, and then you can become, I don't know, a chiropractor or an attorney or a nurse practitioner. You can do it all, you know, that kind of thing.
Let's go whole hog. I think I'll put a shingle outside and offer my services as a surgeon. I hear it pays very well.
Well, all you have to do in today's society is just identify it. You know, you don't have to be it, because having to actually qualify for something, that's racist, all right? But as long as you can say, I identify as a surgeon, I'm sure the AMA would have no problem with this, really. Okay?
Yeah, but you know, your point is so well taken that you've got a justice of the Supreme Court
wondering that, this might hamstring the government's ability. But that's the whole point of the First Amendment is exactly that.
Yeah. And you think about what happened, even just in the COVIDiocy is the most classic example of, you know, anybody that had anything to say that was against what Fauci and the COVIDiocy was all about was censored, ridiculed, fired in many cases, not allowed to work. I mean, this had, and the opposite side had to work 10 times harder to have 1/10 the effect out there in the system. And it was because of the federal government.
And I think the worst part of it is the truth was no defense. It didn't matter that you had the facts on your side, that you were right. You know, you would still be subject to punishment because it contradicted whatever the narrative was that they were pushing. And that's an extraordinarily alarming thing because it's clear they want to criminalize dissent. It's not about truth. It's not about misinformation.
It's about dissent.
They simply want to criminalize dissent.
Line up, shut up, take your shot, do whatever we say, whatever it is. Eat the meal worm sandwich, safe and effective, you know, all the rest of it. And that's it. And that's about it. Without free speech, Eric, we do not have freedom. And if you cannot hamstring the government, we can't be a free people. You have to be able to hamstring the government.
Yep. And, you know, the thing that worries me is that there are a lot of people who agree with it, who have bought into this idea that that's dangerous to allow the propagation of certain types of ideas. And of course, the way this always works is they come out with somebody who propagates a truly repellent idea. You know, for example, Holocaust denialism. You know, of course, we know what went on over there, and it was awful. But they use that as the wedge, and they get people to accept that, well, that should be made illegal. That should be characterized as hate speech. But the problem is that once you grant the government the authority to arbitrate what is hate speech or misinformation, you no longer have free speech.
And what is a hate crime, as an example? Hate crimes, for the most part, are no more serious crimes than just crime. But it ends up being a value judgment put on the state that people
really cares?
Are given.
Yeah, I remember when they first came out with that hate crime stuff. I think it was back in the 90s when that first began to percolate upward. And I thought to myself, what is the relevance of the murderer's liking or disliking of his victim? You know, the fact that should be relevant is, okay, this guy, he committed murder. He killed the person. And that's it.
Yeah, but to murder someone because of their ethnicity or some other characteristic, all of a sudden that's bad. All right, you know, that makes it extra worse, I suppose. Worser.
So, have we ever heard of a murderer who liked his victim?
Not really. Generally speaking, any kind of beating, murder, crime, things like that, it's because you don't like them. Something about them you don't like, but that's all right. We're going to have the state mandating love. That's what it's all about, Eric. Just love. It's like the summer of love in 2020.
You know,
you remember
it
well.
Makes me want to do what John Belushi did in Animal House when he grabbed the guitar from the hippie and smashed it over his head.
I forgot about that scene. You know, but of course, the scene I was thinking about was filling his mouth with mayonnaise and going as the Zit. But I'm sorry, you're much smarter with me than me about that, okay? All right. Another issue, I was talking with our congressman this week, Cliff Mance, about the TikTok bill. And generally speaking, I am when both sides of the aisle start agreeing on everything, then it's like, all right, this is when I really get concerned. All right. I am not a fan.
When both sides of the uniparty are in agreement, then you know whatever they're up to is probably not good.
Generally speaking, you're right. That's the way to look at this. And he had to talk about this. And he did admit that, you know, what happened is that TikTok came under attack. And by the way, I think TikTok is a horrendously poor social media. It's very popular, but I don't think it's a really good thing. You know, Congress had kids calling, threatening suicide if anything was done about that, which in a strange way ended up encouraging the Uniparty to get along with it. In fact, I think TikTok actually hurt itself by doing that, but still.
Sure.
But still, we're supposed to only have federal government manipulation of our algorithms. As long as it's not a Chinese company manipulating the algorithms, then it's all right, right? That kind of thing.
Rand Paul tried to explain this to Neil Cavuto. I watched an interview about that a couple of days ago.
Oh, and there was another Fox guy he was talking to, Brian Kilmeade? God, it was a stupid conversation, you know?
Beyond belief.
Oh, it was
beyond belief,
yeah. Just
and,
dumb.
You know, Paul got into the fact. You know, he looked into the language of the bill, and it's not about TikTok, except in a superficial sense.
It doesn't mention TikTok at all. Not at all.
Yes.
It's about everything.
It's about
all
the federal government, particularly the executive branch, the basically arbitrary authority to decree that a website, a publication, whatever, constitutes some sort of threat to our democracy, and is actionable, that they can then go after them for whatever reason, essentially, simply by saying that they consider them to be hostile or a threat to our democracy.
Now, we don't know if the Senate is going to pass this. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
That as much as I detest these social media and the kids' involvement with these social medias, I do not think it's healthy, all right? I'm the first there, and I would like to be able to do something to improve our culture, but I don't think making it an American social media is somehow going to improve its effect on the culture. What say you?
No, of course not. And you know, again, you know, not to go off on a complete tangent here, but whatever happened to parents supervising what their kids have access to? You know, you don't let your kid go down to the bad part of town and go see a peep show. So maybe try to figure out a way to keep your kid from accessing TikTok.
What, parents actually disciplining children and controlling what they can see? That could never work, Eric. That could never work. Didn't work with my parents. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, it's the usual thing, because they posit a supposed threat, something that's bad. And then, you know, because there probably is a degree of truth to it, then all of a sudden everybody is effectively punished for what some small minority of people have done, notwithstanding that you're literally throwing the proverbial baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that one. 6:48, I'm talking with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Eric, let me take a break, and if anybody has a question or a comment, cars, transportation, anything else, we'll dig into that. I want to talk about your latest review. It's quite interesting on the Mazda and other ones here that you have going on, and let's all kick it around. 770-5633, Wheels Up Wednesday on KMED and KCMD.
You've heard us say it for years, the pests, mold, and allergens under your home impact the air you breathe inside your home. That's where Terra Firma Foundation Systems comes in. Dark and damp areas are breeding grounds for mold and mildew. Warming spring temps add humidity, making your crawl space a greenhouse. Stop the cycle. Terra Firma can turn your crawl space into a clean, dry, protected space. Visit goterrafirma.com to schedule your free evaluation today. CCB 173-547. That's goterrafirma.com.
Joel here at Butler Ford, and if you're looking for a big truck with a small payment, I got you covered. Ford Super Duties are back in stock with lease deals where you can get a Ford F-250 for only $445 a month. For $445 a month, you can now tow and haul with a brand new big shiny F-250. Nobody knows how to make lease deals work on a Ford truck like Butler Ford. That's why businesses and individuals have been coming to us for years when they want a new truck for a low lease payment, like $445 a month on a new Ford F-250. And lease payments are even lower on F-150 and Ford Escapes. Butler says yes to big discounts and rebates. Butler says yes to giving you more for your trade. Butler says yes to $445 a month on a Ford Super Duty. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you know we've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned hybrid, and EV.
42 monthly lease payments is 7,500 miles per year with 97.48 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer dock fee on vehicle with a cap cost of $48,125 on approved financing through Ford Credit. Offer expires 3/31/24.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did, or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Part two of Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters, epautos.com, 770-5633. Eric, how long do you think we have to buy a conventional car that we actually want, a car, truck, van, RV, whatever the case? Because you have an article on EP Autos in which essentially the Biden administration and the regulatory apparat is doubling down on the fact on these EVs, even though people have indicated that other than for 10% of the folks, we really don't want them nor can't afford them. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you could say they're even tripling down. The announcement's going to happen any time now where they're going to come out with these new and improved regulations that will effectively require that two-thirds of the vehicles that are offered for sale by 2032 be at least partially electric, if not entirely electric. And the reason for that is that it's the only way to comply with the regs, you know, the gas mileage regs, the carbon emissions regs. And it's interesting to me because, like you just said, you know, it's very clear that the market is rejecting these things. And there's an element of politics in that. You know, people are unhappy about what's happening, and it's not good for the car industry, and nobody seems to be happy with it. And ordinarily, political considerations would say, maybe we should dial back on this. But instead, they're doubling and even tripling down on it, which tells you that ideology trumps the political considerations, and I think that's a pretty interesting thing.
I would go and take an even more sinister tone with that, though. I really do believe that it's almost as if the elections don't matter, which tells me that the cheat machine, I have a feeling that the regulatory apparatus that runs the United States is still pretty confident that politics will not matter because their politically favored people will be returned to office, or at least enough of them to make sure that there is no change done to this agenda.
I thought the same thing. You'd think they'd sort of back off a little bit, at least until the coming election. And of course, you know, if the election were free and fair, it seems, you know, reasonably possible that Orange Man might win. And if Orange Man did win, it's reasonably possible that some of these EV mandates might be dialed back. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And, you know, this is why elections do matter. And I'm not carrying water for the Orange Man. But if the other side wins this time, that's it. It's over.
The thing is, it's a binary choice. I mean, you can talk about RFK Jr. RFK Jr. is not going to be president. Okay, let us be honest with ourselves about that. And this is pretty much a two-party system, flawed as it is. And so we can have all sorts of arguments about, the lesser of two evils is still evil. It's like, okay, come on. One of the two will be there. Okay, just saying.
Right.
All right. Well, at least we think. Who knows? Maybe the Biden thing would not. Maybe Biden would actually be the one that wouldn't agree to a peaceful transfer of power. You know, I can't transfer power to an insurrectionist. Could you almost see that kind of thing going on?
They've intimated exactly that. But, you know, to get back to the subject with regard to cars, if they have four more years to continue to push this, the auto industry will have no choice but to have gone wholly in bed with the EV agenda.
Does that kind of break the automotive industry, the ability to do anything else? And because they have to plan
for a long time.
Yeah. Because they have to plan many years in advance for their models and the tooling. Right?
That's what I point out. Like, you know, people think, 2032, that's a good bit down the road. Actually, it's not. It takes typically about 4 years from the time that they first decide, okay, we're going to make a new model of whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they flesh it out, they design it, they prototype it, they test it, and they do all the things that they have to do to get it ready for production. So they're already thinking right now today about their 2028 and 2029 models. So, you know, another year or two goes by, and they're thinking about their 2030 and 2031 and 32s. And a lot of car companies are no longer putting any R&D work at all toward new engines, Volkswagen, for example. They've essentially decided to just totally sideline that aspect of their business and put all their efforts and all their money toward these electric cars. And, you know, once that becomes universal across the board, how easy or how difficult is it going to be for them to, you know, reverse course if that becomes even politically possible?
I heard in the news that was reported here on KMED KCMD the other day and how it was being characterized as Toyota is very much behind the curve when it comes to electric vehicles because they've been so successful at selling internal combustion engine vehicles.
Yep.
I'm thinking to myself, they're not behind the curve. They just know that their customer base actually likes what they sell. Have you noticed how that gets characterized differently, though, in the system?
Oh, sure, of course. They gaslight them all the time. Now, you know, Toyota is able to do that because Toyota still has a great market in other countries besides Europe and North America.
Yeah.
You know, they sell a lot of cars elsewhere. GM and Ford don't, you know, for example. Stellantis really doesn't, Dodge and so on. So they're stuck with this market, and this market is becoming force electrified. So that's all they're doing right now. And it's a real tragic, awful thing. And, you know, I believe they should have begun to fight this 10 years ago. 20 years ago, but they didn't. So now, you know, they're reaping what they sowed.
Yeah, 656, talking with Eric Peters. We'll grab a call or two there, 770-5633. Hi, you want to talk with Eric? Who's this? Good morning.
Hi, this is Dave out in the Alpha Game.
Dave, what's on your mind today? Go ahead, you're with Eric.
Well, I don't know if you guys discussed this before, but the Cummins diesel debacle is on now, mine's been recalled. Mine's a 15, and mine's being recalled to have the pollution stuff flashed.
Oh.
Because apparently the Cummins diesels can, those years, you can put a tuner on them and kind of bypass the pollution things. They were fined $1 billion for this.
$1 billion? I don't know. I didn't hear about this, Dave. Yep. I didn't know. But Eric, could you flesh that out too?
He's right. And similarly, they've also gone after Mercedes and one or two other manufacturers, I can't remember off the top of my head, of diesel vehicles. And they're getting more and more aggressive about it. New Jersey is the most egregious example. You know, they if they find out that you have put a tune on your vehicle, they will impound it and seize it and have it destroyed unless you put it back to its original manufactured condition.
Boy, it kind of makes you wonder, Dave, who actually owns it? Who actually owns the vehicle, huh? You ever think about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, in California, apparently, if you don't have this done, you can't register your vehicle again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they know, you take your vehicle in for service. To a dealer, and they plug it in to their proprietary diagnostic equipment, and their computer talks to your car's computer, and their computer knows if any work has been done to your vehicle. And at that point, you're out of luck. You know, they'll void your warranty, and depending on the state, they, you know, they may do something else.
Hmm. All right. Well, did you get it back, by the way, David? Is it running okay, or does it run worse after the flashing?
I haven't taken it in yet, Bill.
Something tells me that when you get it back, you'll probably see your mileage suffer. Is that a fair assessment or concern, Eric?
Oh, absolutely. And I would recommend not taking it. You know, if you can just find yourself an independent repair shop when you need to get the thing worked on and stay away from the dealer.
All right. Appreciate the call there, Dave. Good luck on that. 770-5633. We're talking cars, transportation, trucks, and more, the regulation, how to get around it in some cases, too. And this is the Bill Myers Show. Let me go to line two. Hi, line two. You're on with Eric. Who's this?
This is Nick in Grants Pass.
Nick, take it away. What's up?
The big trucks in California now have to be flashed every 3 months or taken to a dealer and done. If you're a big enough trucking outfit that can, you can afford your own computer system, you can flash it yourself and then send it to them. Otherwise, you have to make an appointment and have your truck flashed every 3 months.
Wow.
Yep.
So it's really tightened up, and this is, in other words, you have to inquire, you have to interrogate your trucks and then send the results to the state. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, and even worse, you know, there are pending regs on the books that are going to require them to use electric trucks to, you know, to pick stuff up at the Port of L.A., for example, and drive it across California outside of the state. Now, maybe once they get across the border, they'll transfer everything to a proper truck and then get it to its appropriate destination. But you can imagine what this is going to cost us.
Yeah, I could. What I would wonder about, though, is what's going to happen when Gavin Newsom issues those please don't charge your electric vehicle deals during wildfire season.
Yeah.
And they run out of juice, okay? All right. Review of the week here. 2024 Mazda CX-5. This is interesting because the CX-5 is actually an older model Mazda, and it's being sold side-by-side with the updated one. What's the story?
Yeah. You know, they're doing essentially what Dodge did for a number of years. You might remember, I think you and I actually talked about it. You could get what Dodge called the Ram Classic, which was the last generation of the Ram 1500.
Yeah.
Alongside the new Ram, you know, and of course the new Ram, you can't get it with a regular cab or an 8-foot bed, and so a lot of people preferred the Classic but still offered that. And it's a similar kind of a situation with the CX-5 versus the CX-50, which is the newer one that came out last year. They're very similar, same drivetrains, but there are some differences, including the CX-5 is a little less expensive, and it's more oriented toward being a sportier, fun-to-drive car. The CX-50 is more of an I wouldn't say off-road because no crossover really does that, but it's got a little more ground clearance. They offer this Meridian package that includes all-terrain tires, so if you wanted to drive it out in the field, you could do that.
All right, and I thought it was a pretty interesting story there. Now, does the newer one have the CVT, the continually variable transmission?
No, and that's one of the great things about Mazda vehicles. They have not gone CVT. Which is to their great credit. It's still a 6-speed automatic, a geared transmission. And there's more. They do not include automated stop-start technology, our favorite acronym.
Hallelujah.
So the engine actually stays on.
Hallelujah.
Until you shut it off.
No ass button on it. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Love that. Great story. So check that out. The review is on epautos.com. You wanted to find out more about that. Either way, you're doing pretty well. And another story before we take off that is a must-read. And I think that anyone who's in journalism or even in talk radio, I can kind of see where this can go. My invite to become a member of the club, and this was when big journalism actually made a play for you to come go to work for them. I think it was the Wall Street Journal, right? Isn't that what you talked about?
It was.
In there?
Yeah, back in the 90s, you know, when I was first starting out and I was working at the Washington Times, I had a couple of articles published by the Wall Street Journal, and I ended up being approached by them to consider coming aboard as an editorial writer, join their editorial page staff. And I thought about it and thought, you know, well, potentially that could really boost my career, not to mention my pocketbook. Potentially a decent amount of money would be involved there, and a lot of opportunities would flow from it. But then I realized I'd be owned, and I'd have to do what they told me. And no matter how much money they paid me, that's a price I wasn't willing to pay, so I decided not to. And I think that's a fork in the road that a lot of people come to. You know, you have to decide whether you're going to be your own man or you're going to be somebody else's man. And I think it's much better to be your own man.
And we all, to a certain extent, have bosses or supervisors, whether it's the market or, I'm an employee, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being, though, is that there is I don't know if people understand the pressure to conform that happens, even if you are a big national talk show host or a big national TV host or something like that. You always get the feeling that there are certain directions you're just not going to be able to go. And I think had you gone with the Wall Street Journal, we would never be able to hear the truth about what's going on, really, with the political influence on transportation. I'm sure you would have been encouraged to, look elsewhere for your stories.
Yeah, I mean, right? We wouldn't heard it from me. There might have been somebody else who ended up doing what I do. But, yeah, I would. It's understood in journalism. And the reason that it's understood or the reason it happens is because, for the most part, what we call the mainstream media is owned by a relative handful of interlocking corporations, and they have an agenda, and they pay people to propagate that agenda. That's the bottom line. That's what it comes down to. And anybody who works in the media who has gone through the same thing that you and I have gone through can attest to this. So I tell people it's not just about journalism. It's about everything. I tell young people, for example, that if you are interested in becoming an electrician or a tradesman, do that. Become a journeyman, learn how to do it, and then start your own business, and you're beholden to none. You know, what you do in this life will be determined to a great degree by you, and, you know, you won't be told what to do by people you don't like, and you won't have to suffer that death of a thousand cuts each day, sacrificing a little bit more of yourself just to get that paycheck.
Yeah, all right, so, man, I sold out, right? I sold my soul for it. There is a certain amount of selling your soul. That's just the reality of it, okay?
Yeah.
And it's a great article. Read it. I found it interesting. It's my invite to become a member of the club on epautos.com. I'll grab one more call, and then Eric's got to take off for his day job, and me too. Hi, who's this? Welcome. Good morning. Hello, line...
Yeah.
Yeah, line two.
Yeah, hi, good morning.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Doug.
Hey, Doug,
this
what's on your mind with
member.
Eric? Go ahead. Go ahead, Doug.
I have a Dodge Ram half-ton 5.7 Hemi with e-torque.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to help
mm-hmm.
out with horsepower and torque and gas mileage. I just want to get your take on it.
You know anything about that, Eric?
Well, yeah, e-torque is essentially a mild hybrid system with a 48-volt electric system, so it shuts the engine off whenever the vehicle is stopped. That's essentially what it does. And with the high-torque starter and the 48-volt system, it kicks it on back on. And, you know, so it supposedly gives you a little bit of extra oomph when you're accelerating. But the downside is, you know, you've essentially got two drivetrains now, and you've got more complexity, more stuff to go wrong. As my understanding, a lot of people who are otherwise big fans of Ram vehicles are not big fans of that e-torque system.
Do you already have it at this point, Doug, or are you thinking about it?
I do, and it's been actually pretty nice and smooth so far. So I was just kind of wondering if you had any history on it, because there's not a whole lot. It's only been out 4 or 5 years. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the main thing, keep maintaining it pretty well. I guess that would be the takeaway on this, right?
Well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of it's out of your control. It's just an inherently more complex system. And yeah, you can maintain it, but eventually, probably, something's going to go awry with it. And inevitably, at some point, depending on how long you keep that vehicle, you're going to have to replace that battery. It's got a battery, just like an electric vehicle, underneath the back seats, not just the 12-volt starter battery that we all know about.
Can the vehicle work without the battery? I'm sorry, Doug, can the vehicle work without the battery? Do you know? Just curious. Do you know? Hello?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't believe it can. I think it's an integrated system, and I think they work work together. Instead of an alternator, it has this e-torque system.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Good luck on that, and hopefully it works out okay. Given that that seems to be a hybrid, but only kind of a part-time hybrid, maybe that'll have more life than some, Eric. Because hybrids are not that bad, is what you've talked about before.
It's a mm-hmm. better option than a purely electric vehicle for all the obvious reasons. And a number of manufacturers are going to that route because it helps with compliance. That's the only reason they're doing this. You know, you shut that big V8 off when the vehicle's sitting at a red light, and at that point, it's not emitting any carbon.
Oh.
That's the sole reason for this.
Yeah, something I wanted to ask about, the automated start-stop, the AS button and the AS system, mm-hmm. you know, that is, put in so many of the vehicles. What about oil pressure? Has anyone done a long-term study of the engines? Is there, you know, any study of additional engine wear because of the multiple start stops and starting up with low oil pressure?
Now, you know, with the film of oil, on all of the friction surfaces, it ought not to be a problem, but maybe it is. It's a good question. I don't know. The definite problem, without doubt, is that it wears and tears the starter battery out faster, inevitably. You know, systems that don't have, like, the collars with the big lithium-ion battery that just rely on a conventional 12-volt starter battery, you know, using that battery a dozen times to restart an engine every morning when you drive to work is going to result in shorter life. So that's a cost that you're going to pay down the road, no question about it.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to talk with some mechanics long-term and see how if we can notice any additional wear just from multiple start-stop cycles on modern cars that are going through there, rather than just keeping it idling and keeping the oil pressure up and all the rest of it. But anyway, good talk as always. And we will catch mm-hmm. you next Wednesday on Wheels Up Wednesday then, all right? Thank you.
You bet. Thank you for having me on, Bill. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.